Okay, thank you. Welcome, Council. We're glad to see you this morning. We're sorry we can't do this live, but we're happy to see you via Zoom. Do we have Judge Mady?
He's there.
Is he? Okay, all right. I don't see him on my little panel up top, but
okay. I am here.
All right, great. Great to see you. The next case is Berkeley Specialty Insurance versus Master Forest Construction Corp, number 21-1287. Before we start our arguments, I will be timing. I suggest you do the same. Counsel for the appellants has two people on their side, so I would just note that you've got times that you've allotted for yourselves. And I would keep time on your own. Don't rely on me, but I will let you know when time is up. I'll ask counsel for the appellants, will either of you be reserving any time?
Morning, Judge Chigares. I'll be reserving 3 minutes for rebuttal.
Okay, great. That will be granted.
And good morning, Judge. This is Philip Berger. I only have 5 minutes, but if I go less than the 5 minutes, we will certainly agree that we will transfer our extra time to appellant's counsel.
Well, all right, we'll see about that. But okay, great. All right, so Mr. Engler, you have 7 minutes you're dealing with right now, okay?
Yes.
If my math is right, and I'm not a math major, so. All right, well, you may proceed.
May it please the court. This case concerns property damages to the Brandt's home and which property damage should have been indemnified under the applicable insurance. I'd like to address my argument time to three issues. First, the damages that were awarded the Brandt's were for property damage to other property, not the product that Master Force installed. Second, the property damage was the result of an occurrence under Berkeley's policy. And third, there are no applicable exclusions in the Berkeley policy. I think it's important.
Your first and second are really the same, aren't they? Given the evolution of Pennsylvania law, the issue really is whether or not the damage to a third person's property impacts whether or not it comes within the definition of occurrence. And that goes back to Gambone and Taverner versus some of the later cases. But that really strikes me as the same inquiry. If the later cases are binding, well, it wouldn't be binding on us, but if we agree with the later cases, and I wanted to ask why the district court didn't even really get into an analysis of Indelex or Pennsylvania Manufacturing, simply relied upon our decision in Specialty Services and Gambone, the Pennsylvania Supreme Court decision in Gambone, which we kind of brought into our analysis. But isn't that the same thing? If we conclude that under Pennsylvania law, damage to third person's property can still fit within the meaning of occurrence, even if the damage results from faulty workmanship vis-a-vis the Taverner holdings, then it seems to me you've gotten the occurrence. But if we conclude that the later Pennsylvania Superior Court cases hold sway, then, and I might have that backwards, then you don't, I've got the backwards. If the definition of occurrence includes damage to third person's property, that's one thing. If it doesn't include that, then we're back in Taverner land. And it seems to me that we don't have an occurrence here.
Yes, Judge. I think it's important to break them apart, primarily because the district court erred in making a finding that the damage, or nearly all of the damage, was to the product itself. It's difficult to portray that in briefing and text, so I've prepared a simplistic demonstrative, which is this being the Brandt's house. It was complete when Master Forth showed up.
Did you make those out of Legos by any chance?
It is actually a birdhouse kids. So, but it works.
Wonderful craftsmanship.
To show the purpose. They had a complete house. They had a complete roof. The only product that was installed were metal panels that were brought in and put over the pre-existing wooden roof. This is the product that was installed, these metal panels. The roof and the wood and everything else was pre-existing. The metal panels were not damaged in the water or in the by water. All of the damage was to the pre-existing wood structures. So the product that was installed is distinct from the underlying damage. So the Taverner Metals case doesn't control the outcome. To the extent that Converter controls
the damage to the property, but I'm not sure if I follow there, because the damage to the property that was damaged, is still third party properties. The Brandt's were not in privity of contract with the insurance company.
Correct. It is the branch property that was damaged, but it was not the property that was installed by the insured. I think that's the distinction that's made in Kverner and its progeny. Those cases dealt with damages to the work that was performed or the product that was installed, and that's not this particular case.
I'm not sure that would make a difference, because the focus there, it seemed to me, on they were concerned about not having an insurance policy become a performance bond. And that's why they looked at whether or not the problem resulted from the workmanship. Here, is the issue the workmanship of the product? That's because that's really not any of the focus here. It's not whether or not the workmanship was defective. That seems to me that was the common pleas court would have gotten into that. The issue is simply the damage to the property, not of the insured, but of the branch.
Correct. It is the branch property. And under the two cases that are most controlling, which are the Superior Court cases, Indelex and Pottstown, Indelex held that where there's a bad product installed or where that product malfunctions, that's sufficient fortuity to constitute an occurrence for a tort-based claim for damages to other property.
Other here, property, that's what I'm trying to focus on.
Other property, yes. And right, the other property would be all of the wood structures that had to be repaired because of the water damage. The Brants brought negligence claims, and the state court found that Master Force installed a defective roof, that the roof was defective because of the slope, and then it caused damages. I mean, the state court made a specific finding. It's at page 252 of the appendix, that the defendant sold and installed a roof on plaintiff's property that was inappropriate due to the slope. So under Indelex, the damage arose from an occurrence because the Brants were sold.
That's a very, very interesting argument. I had not looked at it that way, but you're looking at other property in a way that's different from the way I had been looking at it. I think it's probably different from the way Indelex and Pennsylvania Manufacturing looked at it, but that's not to say it's invalid, but it's an argument. I had not looked at it through that lens before.
And in Pennsylvania Manufacturing, or if I refer to it as Pottstown, it's the same case, which is a more recent holding. The occurrence that was at issue there is nearly identical to what happened here. And the occurrence language is also identical to the policy that Berkeley issued. In Pennsylvania Manufacturing, the court found that water damage to other property was caused by flooding from four rainstorms that occurred between July 13th and I believe June 2016. And it was the flooding from those storms, those distinct events, that provided the fortuity necessary for it to be considered an occurrence. And that's nearly identical to what happened here, that the metal panels did not leak all of the time. There were only a handful of leaks in January 2013, January 2014, and January 2018. And in Pennsylvania Manufacturing, the court held specifically that the underlying action alleges damages to other property caused by a distinct event, which was flooding. And the damage that was compensated was for the damage to the other property, not for the cost of replacing or repairing the defective item that the insured supplied, which was the roof. The occurrence was based on the flooding event of the rains coming through. And that's exactly what happened here in the Brants case. The significant rain and snowstorms resulted in the trial court and the state court found that it was literally raining in the Brants house. So it is nearly identical to what happened in Pennsylvania Manufacturing, which the district court disregarded and did not address. Now,
is there any issue
you're at seven minutes, just so you know.
Is there any issue here about whether or not the problem arose from the workmanship as opposed to the materials? Were the materials defective, or was it the workmanship, or was it both, or does it matter?
I at the end of the day, I don't think it matters, because the roof was defective from the outset. They were sold a bad product from the beginning. Now, there is also...
Now, hold on. You're saying that's different from your little birdhouse there, because I thought what you're saying with the birdhouse illustration, which is helpful, and I thank you for it, is not that they had a bad product from the beginning, but they had this roof which was intact and okay. But what was done to the roof by Wilton, or whatever his name was, the guy who the roofing company brought in, basically made the roof dysfunctional or defective. But I'm trying to find out if that was because of the way the things were applied, or the materials were defective themselves, as opposed to the underlying roof being defective.
And that's where this gets a little complicated, Judge, if I may respond past time.
Yeah, go ahead.
The issue in the birdhouse makes this worse because the slope was less steep than you see here.
Okay.
But there were different types of metal panels that could have been installed. Mm-hmm. The one that Masterforce chose to install was not appropriate for that slope, making it a defective product to begin with.
Okay.
And then when it was installed, there were steps that were taken that made it even worse. And okay.
So it's not defective workmanship. That's interesting. If that's true, and that's borne out by the record, and that's the finding of the Common Peace Court, then we're not even in Governor Land to begin with, you're saying, because we don't an issue of defective workmanship. The Governor is just off the table.
Yes.
Okay.
Okay. I'll reserve the remainder of my argument for rebuttal.
Do we need to revisit any of our past decisions? I mean, the briefing covered the Pottstown case, which said, you know, it looked at our cases in a footnote and said, well, you know, to the extent it conflicts, the Third Circuit's wrong.
I don't think you do, Judge, because the cases that were listed in Pottstown dealt with underlying incidents where it was damaged to the original work or work that was performed by another contractor on the same job, not the other property of the property owner. So Specialty Surfaces dealt with the work from the contractor who was being sued that resulted in damage to another part of the damage of a subcontractor's work, not the original underlying property. And that case only involved claims for contract. Here we have tort-based claims that I think distinguish it.
Okay, I still may be scratching my head a little bit on the difference between, I mean, I looked on page 241, and that's the state court findings of fact. And that says that Masterforce was contracted to install a quote, standing seam 24 gauge metal colored brown roof. And you're trying to push it into another box, which is just metal panels. I don't know what the significance is there. I appreciate your birdhouse as well. It was useful, but we're talking about metal panels, not the entire roof.
Correct, Judge. And if the opinion goes further, and most of the damages are to replace wood, and some of the arguments that were made was that, you know, the wood should have been replaced when the panels were installed, but it was not. The state court disregarded those claims that were advanced by the defendants below. But the idea is the issue with the performance bond that the governor raised was that the product that was installed would be essentially replaced for free. And that's not the issue. What the damages here are is to everything that was under that which was installed. Only the metal panels were installed by Masterforce.
Okay. Do my colleagues have any other questions?
I have none, thank you.
Okay, great. Okay, let's hear from Mr. Berger.
Thank you. May it please the court. My name is Philip Berger. I represent Masterforce Construction Corporation. Masterforce agrees and reiterates the arguments set forth in its file brief and also by the brand appellant's counsel today. Masterforce believes the district court committed an abuse of discretion by ignoring the current appellate case law and predicting what the Pennsylvania Supreme Court would do, and also committed an error of law in finding that there was no occurrence under the policy. I'll be very brief.
You're saying, counsel, that we do need to revisit our jurisprudence.
I think that the jurisprudence that has occurred since Kverner is what the jurisprudence is in this Commonwealth. It is in the Commonwealth. And I think that the district court's decision to just ignore all the opinions since Kverner is problematic. And I'll go through that right now, Your Honor. I have three.
We're going to have to revisit our own jurisprudence then, that made a prediction that you're saying is inaccurate.
Correct, Your Honor. I think that's the case, and I'll do it very quickly.
Okay.
Indelex, I think, is the case which it was reviewed by the court and summarily dismissed by the district court. But it's absolutely appropriate to this matter. It was issued 7 years after Kverner. It continues to be cited and relied upon by the Pennsylvania appellate courts. And it is the case that was reviewed and relied upon by the trial court in the Erie Insurance versus Masterforce matter, which is the corresponding action, which was just found by the president judge of Clinton County in February of 2021 under Indelex, that there was an occurrence. And for the district court to predict that Pennsylvania Supreme Court is going to go against all of the subsequent case law that has happened since the Kverner opinion, I think is pretty presumptuous and abuse of discretion. The facts are that the metal roof that was installed was not due to a defective installation. It was a malfunctioning roof not intended for the Brandt's house, not a defective installation. This brings this case within the scope and the product liability sphere of Indelex. It is different than the Gambone decision. The Gambone decision, which was reviewed, was based on faulty workmanship in the application of the correct finish. This is not that case. This is the wrong defective roof being installed, resulting in property loss to a third party. There was an occurrence under the policy, and Berkeley had a duty to cover that. Secondly, even if it was an accident based on negligence, it's still covered as a defined occurrence. An accident requires an unexpected event and implies a degree of fortuity, a chance occurrence. That's under the Caverner opinion. But as the trial court found that there was negligence by installing the wrong roof, all damages to the third party Brandt's stemming from that negligence is still covered by the insurance policy. And we recite the Donegal, Pennsylvania Supreme Court opinion. And in Donegal, the Pennsylvania Supreme Court found that property damage allegedly caused by negligent acts of the insured may be a fortuitous chance occurrence event to constitute an accident and thus an occurrence under the terms of the policy. So even looking at that Pennsylvania Supreme Court case, there was an occurrence, even with the negligence. And even, we'll go one step further, that even if a third party's conduct is intentional, it still may be deemed an occurrence under the policy under Pennsylvania case law. If the conduct of the subcontractor, Wilton, was intentional, and if such conduct was enabled by the negligence of Masterforce, which was the insured, that conduct may still be deemed an occurrence under the policy pursuant to the Pfeiffer case, which was a Third Circuit case, and which was quoting the Moan versus American Casualty Company of Reading case. So under the Donegal opinion, the Pfeiffer and the Moan decision, for the district court to simply find there was no occurrence and thus no coverage, we believe it was an error of law. My third and final argument is that the Brandt appellants had alleged tort claims in their underlying action. The trial court then entered judgment on the Brandt's tort claims. As the entered judgment was found upon tort law, this action falls outside the Caverner case because the Caverner case is specific to a breach of contract action and to a breach of warranty action. Again, Indelex is the proper opinion as it relates to the tort claim, which resulted in the property loss to the third parties, being the Brandt's. Indelex found that with the tort claim, there is an occurrence under the policy. And accordingly, since this was a tort action, the district court's reliance on the Caverner breach of contract case to determine that there was no occurrence is just wrong, and it was an error of law. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. Do my colleagues have any questions?
Well, you know, this I can toss this out, I guess, to everybody. There's an issue here which we may have to address in terms of our own institutional decision-making. Clearly, as you know, a panel of this court cannot overrule a prior decision of a panel in a presidential case. And in this case, raises the issue of the extent to which a district court is bound by a presidential decision of our court, where subsequent decisions, subsequent to the Third Circuit opinion, may well call into question that prior panel's presidential decision. It's not super clear, and I've looked at Earl probably is the closest with the language that comes closest to this, Earl versus NBR, our decision, is not crystal clear whether or not a subsequent panel can rely upon cases of an intermediate state court that came after the prior Third Circuit case to overturn or revisit that prior Third Circuit opinion. This raises the issue of the extent to which a district court has to be bound by a prior presidential decision of this court, even though there have been subsequent decisions, not of the state's highest court, but an intermediate appellate court, that may call into question our prior panel's decisions. I don't know the answer to that question, and maybe we can avoid it here. I'd love to avoid it, frankly. But it seems to me that's what happened here. The district court didn't necessarily conclude that it was bound by, at least it didn't say in its opinion, that it was bound by our decision in specialty services. But it really did not address Indelex. It didn't really address Pennsylvania Superior. And it really didn't even look at Kaverner, because if you look at Kaverner carefully, in Kaverner, when the Pennsylvania Supreme Court began examining decisions from other state appellate courts, they did mention with some significance the fact that those prior courts did not consider whether or not the damage was to third person's property or third property or property other than the insured property, which to me, the district court had to address that before simply relying automatically on specialty services, including that Indelex and Pennsylvania manufacturing, or Potsdam as you're calling it, does not control. And I can ask this, I guess, of mispronounced the name, I'm sorry, Mr. Kosciusko. For that matter alone, why shouldn't we remand it? Because it seems to me that's a glaring omission in the district court's analysis. I don't know if that's more of a stream of consciousness than a question, I guess, but I wanted to show you that part of the concern that I have here and what's troubling me.
Can I follow up on Judge McKee's question then, Mr. Berger, because I had the same concern he did, and I just wanted to get your take on specialty services. Do you understand specialty services to involve only damage to the insured's own work product or to a third party's product?
The way that I viewed the district court's opinion is that he didn't, the court did not make a distinction between own property and third party property.
In specialty services, you thought, that was something other than than damage to the insured's own work product.
Like I said, I guess my point was that the district court did not make that distinction. And I think that there is a distinction based on the case law, on all the subsequent case law, that when it applies to third party property that gets harmed, that they find an occurrence, and that it was an error of law not to find that there was an occurrence, especially because it was to third party property that was harmed.
I follow. Thank you.
Could you answer Judge McKee's query about, are we even able to revisit? I don't want to paraphrase wrongly what Judge McKee said, but are we even empowered to revisit a prior panel decision in this case?
Is that directed to me?
Yes,
or to
Mr. Is. Yep, you're
thank
still
you. Okay, thank you, Your Honor. I think there's just an abuse of discretion in this case when you just ignore all of the subsequent case law that occurred. And when they're reviewing this matter, just ignoring the case law and saying, I am going to presume what the Supreme Court is going to do in the future. And I'm not looking and I'm just summarily dismissing the Indelex case. I think that all of that case law that has developed and which is what the appellate courts have been finding in Pennsylvania is the controlling law at this time. And that it is, as I said, I use the word presumptuous, maybe that's the wrong term, but I think it's presumptuous for the court to find that it can dismiss that action and it can just presume what the Supreme Court is going to do. And I think that was the basis of the opinion.
Maybe we're talking past each other. I think we understand that. I think what Judge McKee was getting at, what my question is that we've spoken in this area before. Perhaps perhaps the district court was just trying to do its job and saying there's binding Third Circuit law out there. I've got to follow that. And right now we stand in a spot where we say, all right, well, now we're the Third Circuit, but can we revisit what we've said before without, say, an en banc or something else? We were posing to you. I mean, yeah, it's a complicated question.
It is a complicated question. I guess my response to that is, I think this court needs to take that position. I think this court can't just say that, well, we have to continue down the wrong path because a prior panel potentially found wrong. And when you have this district court determining that he is going to make a determination as to what the Pennsylvania Supreme Court says, I just think that that's just a wrong position, and that the panel, this panel, has to review that other panel with all of the subsequent case law that has come out stating that, especially when it's damage to a third party, that all of the cases that have been found by the appellate courts to date after it, after the issue, has found that there is an occurrence. So I think it's necessary to find there, because otherwise we're just going to continue to have this diametrically opposed positions as to what the case law is in Pennsylvania.
All right. Well, nobody asked for this, but is this the kind of case that you think should be certified to the Pennsylvania Supreme Court? We don't do that lightly, but is this the case that we do it in?
I think that's more of an opinion for Mr. Engler, answer. I think the case should be remanded back to the district court, and if necessary, then proceed. But I think the case should be remanded.
But the district court is going to be in the same quandary that we would be in, and that is, what authority does the district court have to not be bound by it and to go down a different path than our 2010 case?
I think Judge McKee, that the district court didn't really look to those other cases. The district court just summarily dismissed it.
I agree.
So I think that it needs to be remanded for the district court to review all those other cases and to review how this case stacks up to all of the subsequent.
But my point is, and it's what Chief Judge Gross was getting at, we have a quandary here as to whether or not we can re-examine specialty services given the intervening law. The district court's even more of a muddle, and it raises the issue of whether or not it, and I hate to suggest en banc in a diversity case. In fact, years ago, I voted en banc a diversity matter. Ed Becker called me up and he said, Ted, you got 5 minutes to explain to me why in the world a federal court would want to en banc a matter of state law under diversity jurisdiction, then I'm going to take 5 seconds to explain to you why you're wrong. So
Judge McKee, I think under your, you know, and this also goes back to the prior question that was asked to me, this may be because we are dealing with two diametrically opposed opinions on this same case, with what the Pennsylvania courts found and what the federal courts found, which are diametrically opposed. Maybe this is the case to move up to the Pennsylvania Supreme Court, because even if the Pennsylvania appellate court finds that Erie has a duty, and then this court finds that Berkeley does not have a duty, or just a really crazy thing, if it switches where the Pennsylvania Superior Court comes back and says Erie does not have a duty, but this appellate court says Berkeley does have a duty, we're still in a quandary where we have totally divergent opinions between two courts as to what Pennsylvania law states. So maybe this is the case to bring up to move up.
All right. Well, thank you, counsel. We're over time.
Chief Judge, can I just follow up one last question? I just so I understand it, because I had thought your argument was that the district court erred in applying specialty services to facts that were not present in specialty services, and thereby disregarding the more applicable holdings of the Commonwealth courts, because I understand that there is language in specialty services that could be understood to not make this distinction between damage to the product and damage to third parties. But my understanding is specialty services only involve damage to the product itself. If that's the case, then is it still your position that we are in a quandary that specialty services binds us in a way that triggers these jurisprudential and hierarchical questions regarding stare decisis and precedent? Or is it just a different case on the facts, the kind of thing that we would assume that courts would ordinarily factor into their decision as to how much weight it is given?
I think it's different facts on this matter. And I don't think that district court took the facts into account when they summarily dismissed the other appellate case law. So I think it actually is different facts here. And that's why I said, I think it can be remanded back to the district court to review the applicable case law as it relates to these facts and as it relates to third party harm based on this, or because of the issue of disparate opinions, that it should then be moved up so that there could be a final determination as to whether harm to a third party based on a tort claim is an occurrence under Pennsylvania law for insurance policies.
Very helpful. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. All right. We'll hear from Mr. Misosia. I'm probably mispronouncing your name, but we'll hear from counsel for the appellee.
Thank you, Your Honor. It's Tony Misosia for Berkley Specialty Insurance Company.
Sorry.
That's okay.
Yeah, counsel for appellee better. Even though you've explained to me how to pronounce it, I'm going to stick with counsel for appellee.
That's fine. And now with me off camera is my associate, Marianne Bradley, who's on the papers. What I'd like to do, in addition to responding to some of the questions Your Honor's just posed to appellant's counsel, I wanted to focus on two main issues. First, what role or standing, if any, does Masterforce have in this appeal, given that it did not file any notice of appeal and filed a belated brief and still to this day has not filed any motion or anything along the lines of a notice of appeal? And secondly, address what Judge McKee and all of you have focused on, which is, were any of the damages awarded in the underlying verdict awarded because of damages that were actually caused by an occurrence? And by saying actually caused, I want us to focus on the fact that this is not a duty to defend case. Berkley issued two policies. It defended its insured under a reservation of rights. The underlying case went to verdict. There was an appeal. The appeal in the underlying case is over. We're not discussing whether or not there's a continuing duty to defend. We're not talking about whether we get reimbursement of defense costs. The only issue before this court is whether, based upon the legal and factual findings in the underlying case, as compared to the terms of the Berkley policy, whether there's any duty to indemnify that award. And the answer to that is a clear no. And it does not require this court to re-examine or revisit any of its prior decisions. First, I want to address some of the questions and I think some of the misperceptions that may be out there. First, there's been several statements that the case before this court is identical to the case that Erie filed against its separate insured Wilton that's pending now before the Pennsylvania Superior Court. The cases are not the same. Although Wilton was a defendant in this case and is a defendant listed on the same verdict that we are talking about today, it has a different policy. And the court can take judicial notice of Mr. Englert's brief filed in the Pennsylvania Superior Court, where he argues that collateral estoppel should not apply in that case, such that the court in that case applies the reasoning in this decision. And the reason that Mr. Englert says that is because this case and the one pending before the Pennsylvania Superior Court involve, quote, two completely different actions involving completely different insurance policies and coverage. What does that mean? Well, I want to talk for a moment about one of the decisions that's not been talked about and one of the decisions that I think demonstrates why this court need not revisit prior law. The Third Circuit issued a decision in Sapa Extrusions in 2019. That decision was issued after Kverner, after Gambone, after Indelex. And I believe it was also issued after Pottstown. So the most recent Supreme Court pronouncement on these issues was issued after all of those cases. And what Sapa found as relevant to this case were several things. First, in Sapa, the court looked at several different insurance policies. It actually looked at 28 different insurance policies, and the court broke them down into three types of policies. The first policy is similar to the one that's before this court, which is a policy that provides coverage for damages because of property damage caused by an occurrence, where the term occurrence is defined as an accident. And that's what I'm going to focus on today. What the Pennsylvania Superior Court in the Erie action is deciding is, what does a policy under the second definition that was addressed in SAPA mean? What the SAPA court referred to as the expected intended definition. The policy in that category in SAPA, similar to the policy that Erie issued to Wilton, defines the term occurrence not just as an accident, but includes additional language in the definition that says that it results in bodily injury or property damage, neither expected nor intended from the standpoint of the insured. The distinction is that the policy, the Berkley policy at issue, has the objective standard, the standard language that was construed in Kverner and Gambone. The Berkley policy does not have the subjective language that the Erie court is considering in the Superior Court action, or that the Intellects Court addressed in its position. And one of the significance of that is that there's much discussions in the briefs about whether the insured expected or intended to harm, whether our expected or intended injury exclusion applies. That's not what this case is about. We're talking about the concept of fortuity that both Mr. Engler and Mr. Berger referenced. And a concept which I think Judge McKee noted when Mr. Engler talked about what he thought were his three issues. The first two issues are really just, is there fortuity? Whether or not there is damage to the insured's product or some consequential damages is irrelevant to the question of fortuity. Whether or not there are claims or causes of action for negligence or breach of contract are largely irrelevant to the question of fortuity. That's what Pottstown says. You don't focus on the label, you focus on the facts. The big difference here, however, is that the facts that are relevant are not the alleged facts, the potential for coverage, but rather what is it that the underlying court found? And what the court found, and this is from record page 245 and 246, a couple pages after where Judge Chigaris was talking about in terms of the findings of fact, the court found that the roof was improperly installed and should never have been installed on this building due to the slope of the roof. The court also found that Masterforce and the other defendants acted in concert and conspired to deceive and defraud plaintiffs by intentional actions and inactions, which included a purposeful manipulation of the many defendants to obscure who was the actual party to the contract, the actual party doing the work, and the actual party responsible for the warranty. There was discussion earlier today by appellant's counsel that this was a bad product. That's Intellects. Intellects talks about a tort case, a product liability case, where there is an active malfunction of a product. There is no active malfunction here. And again, it's not what's alleged in the complaint or what's possible. There's no finding of any active malfunction. This is a faulty installation case and really just deceptive fraudulent conduct in hiding who's really doing the work and misrepresenting who's standing behind the warranty. That's all this case is about.
But
this
the fraudulent conduct, that's not really relevant to the policy. That may go to the damage issue, but that doesn't really enter into the whole issue, the primary issue here in terms of whether or not we have an occurrence.
Whether or not we have an occurrence, though, depends on an accident, which under this version of the policy language is not dependent on the insured's expectation or intent. It's based upon fortuity. And what the courts have held is that faulty workmanship, and this is under the Kverner case, which is the Pennsylvania Supreme Court, faulty workmanship does not constitute an occurrence. What the Gambone Court held, Pennsylvania Superior Court, is that faulty workmanship that leads to consequential damages caused by natural and reasonably foreseeable damages also are not caused by an occurrence. What are those damages? They were where the building exterior was a sieve, the building envelope, the stucco was a sieve and allowed water infiltration, damaging other non-defective portions of the building and getting to the interior. That's the situation here. There is no accident. There is no fortuity. Pottstown was more akin to a premises liability case. Although the person was doing work on the roof and that damaged the products that were stored inside, the insured was not a contractor like here. The insured was somebody who was renting out warehouse space and somebody had stored their products inside the warehouse. And the warehouse, again, didn't keep out the elements and it damaged the property inside. It's more akin to a premises liability case. It's not a faulty installation case or a faulty workmanship case. The insured in Pottstown was not doing any installation or construction work for the third party claimant like we have here. Judge Mady asked about specialty services and to what extent that may be controlling. I think it is controlling, notwithstanding the later decision in Pottstown and Intellects. Again, that case involved issues with faulty installation. It wasn't a product liability active malfunction case like Intellects. It wasn't a premises liability type case like Pottstown. And also, it did involve damage and alleged damage to things more than the insured's product. The insured in that case, Empire, was a subcontractor that was working on a part of the project and it was installing synthetic turfs in a drainage system. That system was inadequate, it was faulty, and it led to problems with depressions in the field, unstable playing surfaces, damage to the underlying layers, sort of like we have here with the roof. And the court in specialty services following Kverner, which again is still the leading Pennsylvania Supreme Court case, and there's no Pennsylvania Supreme Court case that changes it. There's no, and there can't be, any subsequent Pennsylvania Superior Court case that changes it. It followed Kverner and Gambone and the fortuity comments in those cases and said that the natural and foreseeable acts such as rainfall, which tend to exacerbate the damage, effect, or consequences caused ab initio by faulty workmanship, also cannot be considered sufficiently fortuitous to constitute an occurrence. That's the issue that we have here. And again, to the extent that the court was worried about, do we have to revisit because Pottstown came after specialty services, the court again addressed this in SAPA, which was after Pottstown, was after Indelex. Lastly, there was some discussion, I don't know if I'm running out of time, about whether the district court in our case was abused its discretion by supposedly ignoring the subsequent case law. The court didn't ignore anything. In its decision, you know, 515 F sub third from 293 to 294, and the text that goes along with footnotes 67 through 70, the court is discussing Pottstown and Indelex. It certainly didn't ignore them. If counsel says they didn't talk about them enough, that's a different issue. They didn't. The court certainly didn't abuse its discretion and ignore those decisions. Instead, the court did what it should, which said that it's not bound by decisions of the Pennsylvania Superior Court. It is bound by Third Circuit law. It is bound by the Pennsylvania Supreme Court decision in Kverner. It needs to find a fortuitous loss, and there was no fortuitous loss in the case. So you know, the court simply did not abuse its discretion in doing that. What I'd like to do, but I can go on to other topics unless the court has questions. I'd like to answer those, or I'll go into some other aspects of my brief.
Well, one thing is your adversary started off with talking about the distinction between the roof and the metal panels. Is this something we need to get into? Is this something that needs that's critical here?
No, because again, the case law makes clear, and this is SAPA, again, after Pottstown and after Indelex. SAPA says, quote, any distinction between damage to the insured's work product alone versus damage to other property is irrelevant so long as both foreseeably flow from the faulty workmanship. And again, this case is different than some of the other ones. It's water intrusion from a faulty roof and actually just an improper roof. They put on the wrong roof. What basically appellants are arguing here is that we all should become roofers. And we can put the wrong roof on a house, purchase CGL coverage, and then that's an accident? They didn't put the wrong roof on because they grabbed the wrong material or made some sort of a negligent mistake. They did everything they intended to do, and they acted intentionally, and therefore it's not fortuitous. I want to briefly touch upon—
That's a workmanship claim.
It's faulty work, it's faulty insulation, and it's not just a claim. Again, that's what the underlying findings of fact hold. They don't say it's a product liability case with an active malfunction. They're not saying that the roof somehow, you know, buckled under the heat and created gaps that allowed the water in. It's that they used the wrong roofing system because of the slope of this house.
Okay. Counsel, you mentioned SAPA. What relevance, if any, do you see in what I understand to be the facts of both SAPA and specialty services, which do not involve damage to anything other than the installed product? I think I understand you to be arguing that it doesn't matter because the cases have said it doesn't matter. But why does the fact that the facts that were before those courts rose in a different posture make a difference here?
With all due respect, Your Honor, I do think in those cases, if you're looking at damage to something else from the perspective of what is it that the insured in those cases did, there was damage to something other than the insured's work/product. In specialty services, the insured was a subcontractor that only worked on a portion of the layers of the synthetic turf. The entire integrated system ended up getting damaged. There was no longer an ability to use the field for its intended purpose. In SAPA, we don't have an installation case. We don't have a faulty work case. SAPA, you had a window supplier and somebody who put, you know, the coating on the windows that were then given to Marvin. to sell to the builders. And the issue there was that the coating started to flake off, and then that led to problems in the overall window system. It became incorporated and integrated into a bigger project or product. So I think there were things that were damaged in both Sapa and Specialty that went beyond what was simply the insured's work or product. And again, the important comments in Sapa and some of the other cases is it doesn't matter when you're looking at the occurrence issue. You know, again, we're not talking about was there property damage. We're not talking about if you get through occurrence and through property damage and through the damage occurs during the policy period, so you got a trigger of coverage. We're not looking at the your work or the your product exclusions or other exclusions in the policy where some of those questions might become relevant. Was it just damage to the insured's product? Is it just repair and replacement of the insured's product or something else? You don't get to that if you don't have a fortuitous loss. I also want to emphasize that the main parts of the damage award in this case were the attorney's fees and the treble damages. Neither of those was awarded based upon any negligence claim. They're both awarded under the Unfair Trade Practices Act claim, under the Home Improvement Contract, Consumer Protection Act claim. And both of those, according to the court's findings, were based upon intentional wrongdoing by Masterforce and the other defendants. And, you know, whether those acts might in some instances allow for something that's covered because you have property damage caused by an occurrence and maybe you have recklessness or something less than intentional act, that's not the issue before this court. The issue here is this specific verdict and these specific factual findings, do they amount to an occurrence under a policy like ours, which does not have the expected or intended language that some of the other policies addressed in SAPA or the policy in Indilex or the policy in the Erie v. Wilton case have.
Okay, counsel, do you have anything more?
I guess two quick points again, to the extent that you know, Masterforce has asserted its bad faith claims, you know, that should not be revived in any way by this court. It hasn't preserved them on appeal. Further, the district court's ruling was that, you know, there's no unreasonable basis for denying coverage given all of the case law that we've discussed today. And second, the decision that was made by the court in our case was based on the occurrence issue. As I alluded to today, there are still other issues that would have to be examined. I don't think we should go back down. I think this case is consistent with dozens of cases that this court has decided. And in fact, in Pennsylvania, because of the language in Caverner and Gambone, you have policies that add resulting damage endorsements to provide coverage for these sorts of events. This is not that policy. The insured didn't purchase that coverage here. It didn't request that coverage here. So there's really no reason to go back down. There's clearly not an occurrence. And the concept of fortuity is really at the heart of insurance coverage case law and insurance policies. Judge Chigares, I was before you a while ago, about a year ago this time, and we talked about how, you know, the insurance industry and the concept originated here in Philadelphia with Ben Franklin and the concept of insuring homeowners in Philadelphia against fortuitous fire losses caused by things like lightning strikes. It's not intended to be a performance bond. It's not intended to cover somebody for their intentional conduct. It doesn't cover you for putting, you know, the wrong roof because you gave the wrong advice as to what roof to use. This is just not that case. I know from the briefing, it seems complex and there's a lot that's been discussed, but frankly, this is really a straightforward, simple, no occurrence case.
All right. Thank you, counsel. Do my colleagues have any other questions?
No question. I just want to thank, and I'm going to mangle his name, Ms. Yosia, for introducing Ms. Bradley. I think I got that name. But I mean, so often we see these cases where some junior partner or associate labors day in and day out to produce a brief, and then they just disappear. The partner makes the argument, and they don't get any credit except in the eyes of the partner. The court doesn't even know they exist. So that was an extra courtesy that I appreciate. And I wish more attorneys would do it.
Ditto for me.
Thank you, Your Honor.
All right. We'll hear rebuttal.
Thank you, Your Honor. There's one thing that appellant's counsel agrees with counsel for appellees, is that we don't believe that this case needs to go back down to address the procedural issue or the precedential issue that was raised. I think Judge Mady has focused on the issue, which is when you exercise your de novo review of this case and analyze specialty services, you'll see that the facts of this case are different. And I don't believe it's going to be necessary to overturn any pre-existing precedent. This case is distinguished on its own facts. And certainly if the court feels as though there is some insurmountable hurdle there, at that point, certification to the Pennsylvania Supreme Court may be appropriate, but I don't believe it would be necessary once the analysis is done. And to address a few of the other points that have been raised, SAPA dealt with a defective part of a window that became part of a larger system. But the most recent case that this court has issued an opinion on concerning these matters, it was one that wasn't selected for publication. It's the one that Mr. Misyosha referenced when he was before you, Judge Chigueras, about a year ago in Nautilus Insurance Company versus 200 Christian Street Partners. The site for the Third Circuit is 819 Federal Appendix 87. And in that case, it was a duty to defend case, but the court found that the complaint alleged the use of faulty materials and an active malfunction of the product, such as windows and moisture barriers, and that those constituted occurrences. So there are additional cases where this court has looked and said the law has changed since specialty services came out, and there's significant discussion of intellects in that opinion. So I don't think that you're going to need to deal with the precedential issue. The last point that I want to make is on this reference to intentional conduct or the subjective nature of the policy. I think it's a distinction without a difference, and that term is also referenced in the Nautilus cases. That subjective language that appears in the definition of occurrence in, for instance, the Erie policy is in the Berkeley policy. It's in the property damage exclusion, which says that it doesn't cover property damages that's expected or intended by the insured. So when read in combination with the insuring agreement, it is essentially the same definition. And concerning those exclusions, should we get over all of the hurdles for occurrence and whatnot, there is the issue that was brought up about, well, these damages were awarded for something other than negligence. And they weren't. That was the HCPA and UTPCPL were the vehicles to award treble damages and attorney's fees. But it was more than this hiding the ball as to who was doing the work. The state court set forth at length multiple factors that went into the analysis. It wasn't simply the intentional conduct. In fact, the court specifically based its award on the fact that this was the wrong roof to install. It was a bad product to begin with. And on the other exclusions that are there, there's this punitive damages exclusion that's in the briefing. And I do want to draw the court's attention to the fact that in Pennsylvania, punitive damages or statutory HCPA damages are not punitive. They're deemed remedial or statutory. And the punitive damages exclusion that's in the policy at issue doesn't apply. If they wanted to exclude statutory remedial damages, they could have, in fact, did later in the policy. They've excluded damages that would be awardable under the Telephone Consumer Protection Act. That act provides for treble damages and attorney's fees. And that additional exclusion would be surplusage if that they were supposed to just fall under the pre-existing punitive damages.
All right. Well, thank you, counsel. My colleagues, do you have any questions you'd like to pose?
I have none. Thank you.
Nothing.
Okay. Thank you. All right. We thank counsel for their excellent briefing and argument in this case. We'd like to ask counsel to have a transcript made of this proceeding today. We would ask that it be split equally between the appellants and the appellee. And you can work with the clerk to take care of that. Again, thank you for your excellent work. We will take this case under advisement, and we wish you well and good health. Thank you.
Thank you.